girls. What? Keep it fresh.
Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a Baltimore Sun podcast spotlighting some of the area's most interesting and accomplished women. Jessica Hyman came to DJing somewhat accidentally. Known as Trill Natured, Jessica now brings her eclectic style across the East Coast, including at local venues like The Crown and Autobar. She's also a member of Balti Girls, an artist collective for women of color. Jessica and I talked about conflict, community, and how Trill Natured went from homebody to ruling the club. Here's our conversation. So we're talking with 2 days left in the year, I guess. How was your 2017?
My 2017 was amazing, actually. I don't realize, I was just thinking the other day, like I was not realizing how much I did this year because I don't write it down or anything. I'm trying to start saving my flyers and gigs and things like that, but I haven't yet. And I just started thinking back to everything I've done, like a Disc Woman mix and, you know, having, this was the first year of my monthly residency at The Crown, and I'm teaching youth to DJ now. And it's definitely like, I have a halfway established vision, and I think it's like coming together for me.
What's the other half of the vision?
So the other half of the vision is I definitely want to, I guess how you just have to put things in motion when it comes to your goals. I came into DJing kind of on accident, and I just love it. And so I have to work more in the back end of like, you know, it's like sending out emails every day and making sure my branding is right. I'm trying to get a new logo and business cards and that kind of thing. So that part of it is like coming along slower than everything else, like recognition and awards and stuff like that. So it's like I got to catch up. But for the most part, 2017 was awesome.
Are you someone who sets specific goals for yourself, or did you have any resolutions last year, anything like that?
I did not have any last year, but I plan to on, Monday is the first? I plan to sit down and write my goals and resolutions, because I don't think I've ever really done that, like, in my adulthood, like, mindfully, like, sat down and, like, really, like, manifested what I want to do, or wrote down what I want to manifest. So I do plan to do that with my girlfriend, Janae. We plan to do that, and
former podcast guest. We should just get that out there. I was going to say, I think, unless I don't know, you guys might be the first couple who has both been on the podcast. So that's pretty cool.
Yes, it is. Like, it's like deja vu, because when she came to do hers, I was like sitting waiting outside for her, and she's sitting out and waiting outside for me.
Yeah,
because we're going to DC after this. So it's pretty awesome.
So how did you get into DJing, if it was accidentally?
So I guess the success was accidental, or the recognition was accidental. I had kind of observed a couple DJs that were playing locally. Like, I went to just hang out with a DJ at the Hippo, DJ XL. This was like 2012. Just stood in the booth just to watch. You know, what would it be like if I decided I wanted to do this? Because I've always loved collecting music. And I just kind of got an inkling just to check it out. I was not serious about getting any gear or actually doing it. It's weird. I don't know. And then a couple years later, I bought a DJ controller with a refund check and just decided to just start playing around with it. And I loved it, and I started practicing, and I got my first little gig. Black Star hooked me up with like an open mic gig, and people were into it, and I kept going. And people just seemed to like really like my style and like what I had to offer in terms of music and the way I blend and stuff. And it's just, you know, it's just fun for me. It's like pure fun. And so I guess that's what I say when the success came on accident, but like I don't think the DJing thing happened on accident. I think, like, I was meant to be doing this, because definitely it has improved my quality of life a whole lot, you know.
What were you doing before this?
School, and more school. Also just working part-time. I had a couple jobs at CCBC. I was there for a couple years. So going back, I graduated from UMBC in 2010. And then I went up to Rutgers for a grad program in women's studies. Didn't work out. I spent like a semester and a half there, came back to work. So did a lot of like stuff with students and youth, like Upward Bound counselor, academic coach, things like that. And then got into a social work grad program here, which I do plan to finish, but I put a pause on it just about around the time where I started to, like, the DJing thing started to take off. And I was not, like, I was going through a little bit of a depression with the second grad school attempt, like, not motivated to do my work and that kind of thing. So I just said, let me stop this for a second. And I really put everything into DJing. And it definitely, it just feels good to be doing something that I love, to know that I can come back to school, to now be teaching that thing, teaching DJing, and being able to work with youth, which is what I've always done. So school was, like, definitely necessary and, like, helpful for me to get to the place that I am, but I just was going through the motions, I guess, like a lot of people, and I did not know, like, what really, like, does it for me until recently.
Did kind of giving up on the school thing temporarily feel like a risk at the time? Did it feel like a relief? Or what was the experience of making a concrete decision like that to pursue DJing?
So it kind of felt like both a risk and a relief, because I was like, oh, man, like, I was in a grad program once. Like, I didn't finish that. You know, I can't drop out again, you know. But I realized how much stress it was causing me and how I literally, like, could not, like, finish, like, a 3-page paper. I was like, okay, it's time. You know, it's time for me to just take a break. Like, I was really feeling confident about DJing and, like, I could, you know, support myself on that for a while. So I said, it's okay. It's fine. I was just at a place where I was able to tell myself that I'm still cool. I'm still okay, even if I'm not in school right now or if I'm not finishing right now. And I had people around me that were telling me it'll be fine. I actually wrote have you heard of a Hysteria Zine?
I'm not sure.
They are, so it's Tanya and I cannot remember the other person's name, but they run a zine, and I believe it's an issue 2 now. But I wrote a little passage, a little essay called Deadline to Withdraw. And I wrote that at the time that I was thinking about, like, trying to decide whether I was going to drop this, you know, drop out of the semester. And I just talked about how DJing makes me feel so good. And, you know, I've always felt like school is just the thing, you know, it's just what you do, at least until you finish grad school. And how I was being kind of pulled both ways with this decision. And finally, I just decided to, like, focus on self-care and, you know, drop out of school for the moment. So, yeah, that was helpful for me to make that decision, writing that and getting that out and, like, sharing it with people. And, you know, I'll make sure you get an issue so you can read it. But, yeah, it was very, like, it was at the end, like, very liberating, and just knowing that, okay, I'll be okay.
It's interesting that you say school is kind of just something that you do, because I think most people who have that perspective don't end up in, like, competitive graduate programs like mm-hmm. you did. You know, it's just something like, oh, school is something you do till the end of high school, mm-hmm. till the end of college. So, I mean, do you have that kind of, like, academic part of yourself that did want to pursue that in a higher way?
Yeah, it's just all, like, it's sort of like autopilot for me, because, like, definitely, like, I did not like pay anything out of pocket for school. I have loans up to the ceiling, so it's not just like throwing around money or anything like that. It's like, I guess it was just easy for me, and it was just the track that so many of us take. And we think that, like, somehow on the way, like, we'll find that one thing that, like, makes us want to get up in the morning. And for me, I didn't find that in school necessarily. When I graduated from undergrad, like, it was cool to be done with school, but I was not that one that was, like, crying, like, oh, my God, I can't believe I did this. I made it. Like, it was easy. I just kind of, like, was just like, okay, got a diploma now. So I guess that's what I mean when I talk about, like, going through the motions with school and just being almost surprising myself that, like, an artistic craft was the thing that would, like, have me, you know, out here like this, I guess.
Were you artistic and into music when you were younger?
I was into music, but I did not see myself as artistic at all. My dad put me onto a lot of music. He used to listen to, like, Sade, like, very, like, diverse taste in music. Like, I remember he had Sade, Phyllis Hyman, Garth Brooks. Like, so he was, like, all over the place. He loves Luther Vandross. And I think I just picked up that love for music from him. And I got into, like, collecting a lot of music, like, when iPods came along. I would just sit on, like, LimeWire all day and just get everything, you know, that I wanted, basically.
R.I.P.
Because that's what you could do back then. And, yeah, so never, like, felt artistic or creative in any way. And I still, like, struggle with, like, calling myself an artist as a DJ. But I do... You know, people come up to me and, like, you're an artist. I know Genghis in particular, who's part of Melanin Free, a noise squad with Kay Pequeno. He told me, he's like, you're an artist. He's like, what you do is art. I just want you to know that. And I was like, word. I was like, okay. But for me, it just feels good. It's just something I do. And I guess that's a that's a pattern with me. Like, just something I do. Just something I do. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm getting all this recognition and people think I'm just, you know, people are, like, thanking me for making them feel so good, like, after the party's over and stuff like that. And I'm just like, yeah, it's just something I do, something I came into. So I'm working on, I guess, trying to talk about this journey and talk about myself a little bit more, like, intentionally, I guess, like, on purpose.
If it's something that you do, I mean, do you consider being a DJ an integral part of your identity? How do you define yourself?
I do think it's an integral part of my identity. I'm still sort of new to the DJ journey. It's only really been, like, over 3 years. So once again, I'm still, like, coming into, I am a DJ. Like, I was just talking the other day about, like, the language difference between saying I DJ and I am a DJ. I tell people that I DJ. I don't say I am a DJ. So maybe, you know, starting with saying in the new year, like, I am a DJ could just be, like, a small thing that helps me to, like, really kind of solidify my identity and, like own it. Who told me? She's like, Kate Boss. I'm naming all these people just so they can hear me shout them out when they listen to this, but... Kate Boss was like, you need to own it. Like, you're good. You need to own it. So just remembering that I'm good at DJing and I love it and it's going to be around for a while and trying to be more purposeful about what I do with it. And I think teaching DJing is, like, a start of that.
It seems like the Baltimore scene is very warm and quick to embrace musicians and DJs and all of the above, and, you know, be like, you tell these stories of people telling you you are a DJ. I mean, has that been your experience with the kind of community here?
I think so. I definitely am grateful for The Crown, which was a space where I was able to, like, carve out space for myself and have events. And it just, well, it, I think my trajectory and The Crown's trajectory as far as growth are, like, the same, like, the exact same, because they're about 3 years old and I've been DJing for 3 years. So that was, like, very important for me to have a space where I could feel like I could be myself, where people like queer people like me, people of color could come and feel like they could be themselves. And I just kind of built something there. And it just happened to be, turned out to be like a really special place that people love to come to. And yeah, I talk about the Crown because I think, you know, I was able to get visibility and I was able to play for all kinds of people because all kinds of people come through there. And I was able to just kind of meet people and build relationships. And you're right, like it feels easier to build community in a way because we're small, but then it can also be difficult when like conflicts arise and things like that. But for the most part, I think Baltimore is like a perfect place for me to like build right now.
Do many conflicts arise?
I would say not many, but I have, I guess, called out, as you would say, a couple of things that, you know, that I don't agree with that have gone on, like within the music scene. Not too often. I've probably done it like once or twice. But I do think that like being who I am, being a woman, being a Black woman, a queer woman, like I do think that the backlash from that was a little bit more intense than it might be otherwise. And that was just something that I had to deal with. You know, it was a Facebook post about like a local party that I wasn't down with because of who the organizer was. And if I could go back, I would definitely not do that on Facebook, even though I had talked to the organizer in person or individually before I posted that. I would not do it that way because we are such a small community and it can really like, you know, it can send a little ripples out there. And yeah, I was just like having a moment and was like, I'm gonna post this. And I did. I still agree with what I said, but like, that was a learning experience, I think, with, okay, how am I going to go about this? How am I going to do this? How do I deal with conflict in a small scene where, like, there's only a few parties that are, like, really popping at this certain venue? And for the most part, conflicts, not really. There's always going to be people. There's always going to be, like, haters, as you might say. But, you know, like I found my community most definitely with Balti girls, with friends, with like fellow queer folks, like who come out to like all my events, from the folks who make my flyers, who are also friends and queer people and queer women. Sophia, actually, another shout out, who makes my flyers for my monthly party version every month. So yeah, just finding like a tribe, a squad, a crew. And it really makes things better, makes the journey better, despite conflicts that come up.
Are you from Baltimore?
I'm from Harford County. My parents are from Baltimore. I was born actually right across the street at Mercy. But I grew up in Harford County, Abingdon, Edgewood area. And we moved out of Harford County after I graduated high school. Me, my twin brother, and my parents. So yeah, but having my parents be from Baltimore, it's like a second home. Like Harford County's right up the road. Like been back and forth here all my life. And my grandmother owned a beauty salon on North Avenue. And my grandfather was a tailor in the same building. So kind of like my roots are definitely here. But I came up, you know, in the county, like privilege, good schools and things like that. So I'm definitely like fortunate for that and acknowledge that and where I came from.
What was your experience of the city like growing up?
So every Saturday we would come, mostly me, my mother and my brother. She would drag us into the city on Saturdays to get her hair done at my grandmother's salon. And we would spend like all day there, pretty much all day, because Saturdays are like a thing at the beauty salon. And that stands out for most to me. Those, you know, my experiences at the shop, we called it, on North Avenue, like right across from Everyone's Place. And that was the spot. That's where we would be every week. And sometimes I would, me and my brother would go home with my grandparents who live right out Liberty Road, and we would go to church with them the next day. You know, we'd also visit family. My dad's family is from East Baltimore. My mother's family is more over west. But yeah, so it was just like we were going into the city today. It was just like a second home kind of thing, like back and forth kind of thing. And that's why, like, when people ask me, am I from Baltimore, I have to hesitate. Like, no, I'm from Harford County. But, like, this is like, basically a second home for me, and, like, another place for me to feel, like, that is mine.
Were you aware of Baltimore music or the club scene or Baltimore club, anything like that growing up? What kind of stuff were you into?
Yes, so I love to listen to... I wasn't really allowed to listen to like hip-hop or hip-hop on the radio until about middle school, so that was like a delayed kind of like coming into all of that, but I remember I used to love the hearing the club music mixes at night on the radio, usually on the weekends. And I never went out as a teenager. Like, I did not honestly go out until I was, like, 20 years old and in college. So I was not that kind of kid. I just kind of stayed home. But I would listen to stuff on the radio, like K-Swift. You know, I knew about her even before I had a chance to, like, to go to the Paradox and hear her DJ. She inspired me, and I wasn't even, like, thinking about DJing at that point. But I was just like, wow, I love her. So, yeah, and, you know, I really got into having a music collection when I was allowed to, like, buy CDs and stuff, which I had to buy from Walmart. I had to buy, like, the clean version.
The clean ones, yes. Sell?
Yeah, at Walmart, you could get the edited version of, like, whatever came out.
Well, it sucked because I would want, you know, explicit CDs. Mm-hmm. I wasn't allowed to have them. So I'd say, we can go to Walmart and get the clean one.
Uh-huh.
But my mom was also against censorship. So she would say, I won't get you the clean one, but that's I won't hilarious. Get you the dirty one either.
Uh-huh.
So I remember Nelly Hot in Here was very contentious in our like third grade class with the explicit or the clean CD from Walmart. Yeah.
Yes. I was like, as long as I could get it, it was fine. It's funny because, like, a lot of songs that I was listening to, like, in middle school when I had to get the clean version, like, I remember the lyrics with the censored part. So, like, when I'm rapping a verse or whatever, like, I'll leave out, like, a curse word.
Yeah.
It's just, like, that's how I learned it.
Have you ever done that if, like, you ripped a version off off YouTube or just had a random demo back, you know, when we downloaded all that stuff, and so you hear the actual edited version on the radio, and you know an extra verse or something. I remember that experience.
Yes. Yeah, and back to LimeWire, which was amazing. Really get whatever I wanted with no budget whatsoever. I mean, the quality maybe was not the best of the tracks, but yeah, so music, middle school, high school was definitely like where I became aware. I think the first rap song that I heard was on 92Q. Not the first rap song that I heard, but like first time I was like, oh, what is this? I wanna check this out was Will Smith, Getting Jiggy With It. It was on 92Q. We were in a friend's car, and I was like, I peeped, you know, the radio station so I could turn it on, you know, when I got home. And that was like the first, I was like, oh, I like this. And I started trying to get my own music from then on. My first tape was Mariah Carey, Butterfly.
Amazing. Classic.
And what happened was I got it with my grandmother because, you know, like that's when you do stuff you're not supposed to do with your grandmother. So I went to the mall with her. I got this tape and I brought it home, and my mother saw it and she took it away from me. She was like, no, you're not ready for that. And at this point, I think I was in the fifth grade. So that was the experience with my first like ownership of music. I eventually got it back when I got older. But just a little story, you know, just the people have so many stories about music. You know, like when you bring up a song or an album, it just takes you right back to a place. It's crazy.
And I remember how excruciating it was when you heard an amazing song on the radio, There was no Shazam. There was no, you know, if they didn't say what the song was a couple of later, before we were on the internet, you know, you just had to wait till the radio played it again, or you had to hope that one of your friends knew what it was or something.
Yeah.
But I would just like play those over and over in my head in the hopes that you would hear it again.
Yes. I used to record, off the radio too, because like you could, if you had a radio with a tape player, you could record like internally. I used to do that too. And that was another way to like maybe play it for somebody and be like, hey, you know what song this is?
We sound very old, but for the record, we're on the young side.
On the young side.
So you weren't going out in high school or anything. When did you kind of get into partying? And I don't know, that's just kind of interesting that you were more of a homebody then and now you kind of make your living off of parties.
Yes. It's crazy, actually. I went to my first party when I was like 21. So it was my last year at UMBC. And I had just, you know, I was a late, I don't know if you call it blooming, like when you start drinking and stuff, but I was a late bloomer. I actually got drunk for the first time when Obama got elected, which is the perfect time to get drunk for the first time.
That is much more poetic than most people's first experience getting drunk.
Yes. I was like, you know what? We got this. Because I was doing like voter registration work and like calling voters and stuff on campus. And I was really into it and invested in it. And that was the first time I got drunk. It was so funny. The first time's always funny. But yeah, it was just like, and I think, you know, I think being queer had something to do with it as well. Because like the mainstream party scene is like very straight. And I didn't get it. Like I didn't get why like they would be so excited to go out on the weekend. And obviously it would be like, you know, for straight folks to mingle with, you know, for men to mingle with women and like pick up women or whatever, and vice versa. And that did not click for me because I was in the process of coming out and I was just not interested. And so I think, like, coming out definitely was, like, motivated me to get out there, I guess, and, like, get my life, as they say. And I went to the Paradox on Third Saturdays, which was, like, the queer night. And they would be open till like, 4 or 5 in the morning. That was the spot every month on Third Saturdays. So, yeah, that's when the partying thing became normal to me. And like, I understood like why people got so like pumped to like get drunk and go out and, you know, and dance or go to the club in the bar. Yeah.
Was that something that once you started getting into it, you knew you had a greater interest in, or like you knew you wanted to be part of, or how did you kind of get to that point where you were shadowing that DJ at Hippo?
It's so fuzzy. I try to tell this story. It's really fuzzy. I just know, I think I just went up to DJ XL and said, hey, can I just watch you play? I didn't necessarily say it was because I wanted to be a DJ, I don't think. The Hippo was just a place where I loved to be. Thursday night at the Hippo was hip hop night. And you could like, I would always just kind of stand there and like watch the DJ, and I would like try to go up to the booth and like give them requests and stuff, which is now is like annoying to me as a DJ, which I hate, but that's what I used to do. And something just drew me to it, and I just wanted to see what it was like. And I was hanging out with a person at the time who knew that DJ, and I think that's how I was able to get connected to them. And they were, like, really open. Like, I felt like I was getting in the way or, like, you know, messing up their flow, but they were cool with it. And it's really cool to have that. I would say, like, if you're going to start DJing, it's, you know, ask somebody if you can shadow them. Ask someone questions. Find someone who's already doing it. Because it really, it can be inspiring, but it can also just kind of give you a leg up and let you see what something is like before you get all the way into it. But yeah, the story is so fuzzy. It's like normally people have these stories about, you know, that moment or that first moment or that experience. And I can't quite tell people that, but obviously, you know, it happened, and that was history, I guess.
How did you develop your style?
So my style started out, I really like to blend. I like to blend music. Some people don't, you know, blend very long. Blending is basically mixing two songs together so they're almost like on top of each other and you hear both of them at the same time and then you transition into the next one. I have a lot of fun blending, and people normally think of blending for a long period of time, blending house music and dance music, but I was part of a DJ pool where I could get like free music for a monthly fee. Anyway, they make special edits of songs that have like an extended intro. And I would use those to blend almost like I was blending like house music or a dance song. And then I would blend like hip hop into house music or into club music. And I think that is what people like about the way I play and like. Because people would just come up to me and like, you blend, you know, people don't blend anymore and that kind of thing. And it sounds so good to me. It's my favorite thing to do is just blend. And I think it really, like, when you pick the right ingredients, which is the right songs, it can be awesome.
You've obviously said it's just fun and enhances your life. But yeah, when you're up there in the booth, like, what does DJing give you?
Oh man, I love to make people feel like I love that I can make a room like move all night, and I can play a song and make a room like go back to a place like in high school or middle school. I love that I can educate people by playing stuff they never heard before. I love that I can look at a new crowd and figure out what's going to make them move. Or I love the challenge of having to figure out like what's going to make these people move. And there's like a push and pull sometimes, which is a challenge, but a cool challenge. Like sometimes I will cater. If there's a stubborn crowd, like I will cater to them, even though it's something I really don't want to play. But it'll make them dance, I'll play it. But then the next song will be like something I wanna play and like, I don't care if you like it. So that's what I mean by push and pull, which can be fun when you finally get a crowd to like give in and like just party with you. Yeah, I get into a zone, as people tell me, as Janae tells me a lot. And I just be feeling the music, and time goes by fast. Like I can play for 3-4 hours, and it feels like, you know, feels like one when it's the right party and the right crowd. Yeah, it just feels like, this feels awesome.
Tell me about the work you do with kids.
So I'm currently at Baltimore Youth Arts, and I've been there for about a month. And after the new year, I'll be teaching, working on like lesson plans right now and stuff. But I will be teaching at the juvenile jail downtown, and I'll be teaching at a rec center on the west side. So I'm not into that yet, but I will be in like 2 weeks. So I've never actually formally taught before. I've never taught anyone how to DJ, so it's weird having to like something that has always just been in my head and that I just do and don't talk about, like having to put that into a lesson plan and like teach someone who's never done it before. The working with kids part is easy because I've done that for a while, and I love like the high school age group, teenagers. But it'll be interesting and like a challenge at first to be a teacher, because like standing in front of people for like 2 hours and making them pay attention and keeping them engaged seems intimidating. But I think it'll be awesome.
That's also what you already do, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. you're right, but I got to do it without DJing.
Yeah,
DJing
without the good music. It sounds extremely difficult. But yeah. I'm like, you have the experience of standing in front of a sometimes hostile crowd.
Yes.
And getting them on board with you.
Yes. I have always admired teachers, just the way they're able to like keep a room full of students. Like the good ones are able to keep a room full of students like engaged and literally talk for like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours in college. But then I was like, you know, I'm going to be teaching. They can do it. I can do it. I know how to DJ. So that's a plus. I don't have to teach myself and then teach them.
What is it about the teenage group that you like?
I think I can relate to them easier because they're just closer to my age. And I guess I remember, like, that's the most recent memory of being a kid. I think that they don't seem as openly eager for, like, a mentor as maybe younger kids, but they definitely are. And, like, you can watch them watch you and, you know, you can really, like, leave them with something if you make that effort to. I'm not like intimidated by them like a lot of people. A lot of people like hate that age group and like are scared to death. But yeah, talk to them easier for me. I don't know what to say to like a 4-year-old because I don't know what they understand. I can't remember what I understood.
Yeah.
you know, but yeah, that's been my favorite age group to work with. They're fun, like can have, you know, conversation with them and not have to like think about, you know, do they get this? Do I need to put this in another way or something like that?
So you've got owning your identity as a DJ. You've got teaching. What else is next for you in the new year?
So I don't know if it's going to be in the new year, but I definitely want to finish school, social work school, which I have about a year of left. I want to write down some specific shows, like already established shows that I want to play. I want to play Poppy Juice, which is a big party, queer party up in New York. I want to travel more. I've played in New York, Philly, DC, playing in Richmond in February. But I think maybe like a mini tour is on my list of things to do. I definitely want to branch out and like I said earlier, intentionally seek out particular opportunities that are maybe not here. Because I've done a lot here and it's just time to like expand, I think. Teaching, school, more DJing, and keep my residency going at the Crown, which is every month, second Saturday. What else? Oh, my health. I want to work on that this year and lose some weight. I gained some weight over the past couple of years because I got into like craft beer and stuff.
Yeah, that'll do it.
And that was definitely, yeah, that's a thing.
There's a lot of good things to eat and drink in Baltimore.
Yes.
It's not easy to keep it off.
Yes, yes. And I was living in Mount Vernon, which is like there's food like on every, good food on every corner. Kumari is like my favorite spot. It's a Nepalese spot. But yeah, I wanna lose weight and maybe go vegetarian. Not vegan yet. Maybe vegetarian.
Well, Jessica, thanks so much for coming in. I'll see you in 2018. It's over already.
Wow. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Trill Natured. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a Baltimore Sun podcast. You can find Female Trouble on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and everywhere else you like to listen. It would really help us out if you subscribed and gave Female Trouble a rating, too. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty, featuring Baltimore's TT the Artist. Thanks again, and we'll be back next week. Dope Girls! Dope Girls! Dope Girls! Keep